Strengthen your immune system with Goldman Laboratories liposomal vitamin C and get 10% off. Quote 10 off at goldmanlaboratories.com.
Hi, and welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, that's on a mission to make integrative medicine available to everyone in the UK with cancer. Another major step forward in this direction has just taken place. Integrative Oncology UK 2021 is the first major event of the British Society for Integrative Oncology, a professional organisation that's been around a while, but it is finally now coming into its own, with a relaunch focused around this hugely successful event. Dr. Catherine Zollman, Medical Director of Pennybron UK, was the chair of the event, and I've invited her to tell us all about it. Hi, Catherine. Here we are, hot after the BSIO's first event on any kind of scale in the UK, and I think actually I can say that it is the biggest event of its kind. Is that true? There's nothing quite like this for professionals happened in the UK before now, is there?
I don't think there has been. I think certainly not anything focused on cancer. I think it's a first one of its kind, as you say.
Fantastic.
We had over 370 different professionals register from over 30 different professional groups. What was really exciting was, you know, was 27 different countries were represented, but about 40% of the attendees said that they were new to integrative medicine. So
Amazing. This
was a group of people. A quarter of the people said that they worked in the NHS, which again is fantastic for this sort of
Brilliant.
Event. Often we see people coming from private practice or other areas, but this is, I think it was a groundbreaker.
Fantastic. Amazing. So you, Catherine, were the chair for the event. I imagine you were quite pleased to be doing that job. I mean, it's the sort of thing you've been wanting to see happen for a long time, I imagine.
Absolutely. And, I was so delighted. We've talked about the audience, but also our speakers and our panellists were really represented a huge range of people who from very diverse backgrounds to seeing more dialogue, more interprofessional learning, better outcomes for patients. We had people from university academics through to people with lived experience. We had three oncologists on the panel, one cancer nurse specialist, one chemotherapy nurse, palliative care doctors, GPs. It was just a really heartening mix of people all coming to this from different angles, all prepared to learn and to listen, which is just great.
Nice. And also, I mean, apart from one notable exception, I think it's pretty much a homegrown group of speakers. Is that right? Everybody was UK.
So all from the UK.
Yeah,
except
lovely.
For Dr. Santosh Rao.
Yeah.
And it was lovely to have him there because the inaugural meeting of the BSIO back in 2012, I remember the president of the SIO coming to give us his blessing and good wishes. And it felt very, very sort of right that, 9 years on, we have this new crucial stage of our development. We also have those links because I think, why try and reinvent the wheel if other countries are doing things and that we can learn from, then all the better. And I think that was a wonderful talk. In the end, we ended up sort of starting with it because he was live on the Friday night, but then closing with it because we played the recording of his session on at the end before our final panel discussion. And it felt very fitting for him to kind of reflect on where the SIO and this whole movement has come from, but also where they've got to and where we still need to get to. And it felt really like there was a lot of collaboration internationally as well with that.
Yeah. Well, one of the great things about starting late in the game, as the BSIO is really, is that, of course, we can actually hit the ground running, in fact, because there's so much we can just pick up and use that's already been put together by organisations like the SIO. So there are some advantages to being so far behind.
Yes, it's nice to frame that positively, isn't it? And we can learn faster and develop quicker, probably. You're right.
Yeah. Okay, so look, I want to talk a little bit about the sessions of the day, because you've got some great speakers there, but before that, I just wanted to, you got any particular highlights, just things that really jumped out that were, you know, magic moments?
Well, it always is. I mean, kicking off with Rob Thomas and just the work that he's done and how over the years that he's been involved, how the evidence has really now, I think, has made a watertight case for the fact that actually not including things like nutrition and physical activity into everybody's cancer plan is now not good practice. You know, it's actually almost verging on the negligent, he went as far as to say. So I think that's wonderful. And he's such a sort of clear and sort of direct speaker that I think he really, it was a great rallying call for the beginning of the conference. Mm. I really enjoyed the session on psychological and emotional issues. It's, you know, again, I think the evidence is there for the nutrition and the exercise, but I think nobody can, who's worked in the field of cancer, can doubt that there are huge psychological and emotional aspects. And I think naming the sort of potential post-traumatic distress, post-traumatic stress, and also naming the potential for post-traumatic growth were really helpful, because I think integrative approaches can really help turn the one into the other if started early enough. I think, yeah, I really enjoyed the session on prehabilitation as well, because again, the opportunities just seem so obvious and such a sort of win-win situation if we can get patients and professionals working together at that stage, getting people fit in the holistic sense of the word fit. So really mind, body, emotions and spirit all sort of ready for treatment and working in partnership with their professionals rather than being dragged along sort of unwillingly or not in the best state, still in the state of shock.
All right.
So yeah, right. That was a great session too.
Brilliant.
What were your highlights, Robert?
That's a good question. Let me have a little think about that. Well, I haven't seen them all yet, but of the ones I saw, I also enjoyed the session on stress and all the mind and emotional issues around it. I think, as you say, it's a massive thing that's just being overlooked. And I just interviewed Dame Laura Lee from Maggie's, and they're actually really shining a light on this at the moment, done a big survey. It's actually been shown that a huge number of cancer patients actually find that dealing with that side of the things is worse than dealing with the treatment. So when everybody knows how bad the treatments are, so I think that puts it in context, really, isn't it? And shows just what a massive thing is being missed here. The whole area of what can be done around conventional treatments, I think, is also a great one to bring up, because it's such an obvious win for everybody, this area, and it's so great to bring it out, and so great that it was actually, you know, we had an oncologist there in that session, and
a chemo nurse,
yeah,
and a cancer nurse specialist. So I thought that was a great session as well, really, really valuable, you know, and very evidence packed as well, saying, you know, it's not just these are not just untested modalities, but actually there is emerging evidence that rather than sort of everybody stand back at that point, it's actually everybody pile in at that point, because there's so much to gain.
For everybody too, you know, it's the oncologists are going to have a much better time feeling like they're supporting their patients in a far better and broader way, and the patients, of course, they're going to be over the moon when this stuff is becoming more mainstream. So,
it's not just that the oncologists are going to feel better about it; they're actually going to be able to deliver their treatments more effectively and at the doses that are recommended, rather than having to make dose reductions further down the line because of toxicity. And I think that's something that every oncologist aspires to get there. You know, they call it the relative dose intensity, as close to the ideal as possible. So it is, as you say, it's really a win-win there.
Mm. Okay, well, look, it wasn't just a bunch of random sessions on all sorts of great topics. Actually, there's a structure behind the day. So do you want to say a bit about the thinking behind the arc of the whole day?
Yes, and I think I'm really pleased. I think the whole conference committee worked really hard and teased out a program that made sense over the day. So we started really thinking about, you know, Rob Thomas gave us an introduction to the field in general, but then we started, you know, from the moment of diagnosis, preparing for treatment with that prehabilitation phase. We went into some of the psychological aspects because they hit almost immediately. Then we went into the treatment phase to look at what integrative approaches could bring, you know, actually during treatment to minimize side effects and improve outcomes. Then we looked at patients with advanced disease and how living with advanced disease, how we can make a difference in that setting of living with advanced disease if you use integrative approaches. And again, I think bringing what was really nice is that we had some people with lived experience in those different phases talking about this, and professionals who were very involved in delivering care at those different stages. So, and then we finished off with a panel discussion. Well, we had then Santosh Rao talking about the future. So again, mm-hmm. kind of as an oncologist who's working in an integrative way, right in the middle of a major cancer treatment center in the States, you know, where did he see things fitting in? Where did he see the gaps? Where did he see the future? So that was, so we were kind of leaving people with a sort of view of where this could go in the future. And then it was great to get our session chairs and key panelists back into a panel discussion to pick up some of the questions that hadn't had a chance to be answered earlier in the day final panel discussion.
So it had a sort of chronology to it the whole day, starting and working the way all the way through cancer treatment and out the other end. Yeah, very good. So you mentioned having people with lived experience there, people who got or have had cancer as part of the event. I mean, it's not necessarily the professional events have those people there. What did they bring to the event? How important was it that they were there?
I think it was hugely important. And I mean, we were lucky enough to have some people who were doctors and patients as part of it. So, you know, two of our speakers who were medics had also had experience of cancer themselves, and I think brought a richness and a depth to the whole sort of conversation. And, you know, and actually it's one of the things we know as professionals, you can't really doubt a patient's experience. If they're telling this made a difference to them, that's, you know, you have to work with that. But actually when somebody can bring the science of like, this made a difference for me, and this is what I understand about the science and why it made a difference. It's just got that extra power to tell a powerful story.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if we are really talking about integrative oncology, the person and their, you know, many of the sessions ended up coming to the same idea that there is no one size fits all, that we really need to take a personalized approach about what combination of these very diverse strategies are going to be the most important for a particular individual in a particular situation at a particular time. The only person who can really advise us about what the right combination is the patient. You know, we can bring our expertise of this sort of thing helps in this sort of condition, but actually if the patient is at the center of that conversation and isn't really a core part of the health creation team there, then I don't think it's not truly integrated. Mm. So I think it was absolutely important that we had those voices in the room. And I think going forward, I think it's going to be really important that BSIO works with people with lived experience to kind of develop its education program, its guidelines, all of those sorts of things. So I feel that's really important.
Great, really good to hear. But in terms of our NHS, it's probably the biggest single cultural change that's got to be made, isn't it? Because, I mean, the NHS is a sort of systems-based organisation that works with evidence which is based on vast numbers of the population and what works supposedly for everybody. So the whole thinking is behind, well, you know, if you've got this diagnosis, this is what we do. So this is a massive change in direction to start. I know it is happening to some extent, though, with genetics is bringing it in, isn't it? But say a bit more.
But I also think that quality, particularly in the long-term plan with regards to cancer, quality of life and measuring quality of life are now becoming, and you know, this is a central government you know, decree almost that this is going to be part of the metrics by which different cancer services are evaluated. And so quality of life, which is by definition a personal thing, is actually going to be added and is going to be one of the targets in a way that people that cancer providers have got to pay attention to. So I think it's coming. I think the BSIO is coming at a great time because cancer commissioners and cancer providers will be looking to think, how can we improve people's quality of life? And here on a plate, we know that integrative oncology has tools and has strategies which do really focus on that. So I think it's great. I think it was wonderful that we had mainstream oncologists both, you know, on the panel, you know, talking about how their views have changed and how they are incorporating these things in a very practical, everyday way without having to leave the NHS, without having to massively change the way their clinics are organised. Simple little things that can be included. And I thought that was really heartening. And you know, to see so many NHS people in the audience, and I've had a few emails from various NHS kind of contacts that I've had who are definitely not already converted to integrative medicine, saying, you know, fascinating, really interesting day, thank you so much. So I think people with cancer are getting louder about the fact that they want something more, that they're using something more. And it's great, you know, there's organizations like Yes to Life that have empowered them to speak out. I think it was really one of my favorite moments was in the psychological session. One of the questions was somebody saying, I find it really disheartening when my oncologist just doesn't have time to listen to any of the things that I feel I'm doing that make a difference to my well-being and my outcomes. And Professor Leslie Walker just said, well, just tell him that this is really important to you and he needs to listen. Just demand that he listens to you. And I just thought, this is great, you know, giving people that sense of just saying, excuse me, you know, you may not have time for this, but actually for me, the time that we're spending in my consultation, actually it would be better off spent talking about this than about the potential side effects or whatever it is that. So I thought, I think there is a real feeling that people are demanding. And
there is a big demand.
It's interesting. Yes, I don't mean people are demanding. I mean people are demanding something better, and rightly so.
Yeah, it's great, really great. And so hopefully this conference has got a few hearts and minds a little bit won over. Once the door starts to open, then you're on a journey. But if it remains shut, you don't stand a hope. So really good. Yeah, there's a couple of the sessions focused on things which I sort of think of as buzzwords, in as much as they, you know, I never heard them a couple of years ago at all. So I just thought it'd be interesting to talk about them a bit. One of them was prehabilitation. I never heard anybody say that a little while ago, but actually everybody talks about it now. Why do you think it's so important, and why has it made such a great stride into the dictionary of healthcare?
It's such a good question, Robin, because I think we've been doing it. You know, at Pennybron, we've been running a treatment support clinic, which has been preparing people for treatment for a very long time. But because we called it sort of preparing for treatment, it didn't quite have the same ring to it. Prehabilitation, I just think, is a really clever term that kind of, you know, rehabilitation is obviously well ingrained in NHS speak. Prehabilitation is just sounds like something that should happen in hospitals. And so a lot of people have jumped on the bandwagon. I mean, I think there's been some very good research showing just how much money can be saved, particularly around major surgery for upper GI cancers, so stomach and esophagus cancers, or for lung cancer patients who, if you can actually get them fitter for surgery, they can have curative treatment. If they're not fit for surgery, they end up on more palliative treatment. So the actual economics of that are making a lot of sense to cancer managers and cancer clinicians. So I think prehabilitation is a very clever word. And I think what we need to do now is make sure that prehabilitation it's an expanded view of how do you get somebody ready for treatment that doesn't just focus on, you know, doing a few exercises or giving up smoking, but that actually really takes the whole person into consideration and gets them, you know, deals with their shock, deals with their fear, deals with some of the underlying issues that may and comorbidities that may be going on, really deals with you know, looks at them as a person and thinks, what's the most important thing for you that we can find that will build your resilience and help you not just through this immediate first part of the treatment, but help you in the long term to minimise your chances of cancer progression and cancer recurrence too.
Right.
So, yes, I think prehabilitation is a space to watch because I think there will be more research in there.
Right. And the other word, which really I think has the pandemic to thank for its sudden emergence into everyday speak, is on the news everywhere, is resilience. I don't really remember anybody talking about resilience in terms of health before, but it's a very important and interesting concept that's actually it's talking about something which, yeah, I think has been, people have been busy developing it and supporting it in integrative medicine for many years without giving it that name necessarily. But the pandemic has highlighted just how important it actually is when you're under attack, if you like, physically in some way, you know, when you need to meet a challenge.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think it's been explored in a lot of settings, maybe non-health settings. But again, you know, it's interesting. Penny Bronn has had it at the heart of its whole person model, right in the centre. We put optimum resilience right there. And have done for the last sort of, I guess, 10 years, probably. It's been sitting there in our model using that word, because I think it is such a brilliant word to describe exactly that capacity to respond to any of life's challenges in the most constructive way. It's not talking about optimum health.
No.
But it's that ability to meet life's challenges with all the resources that are potentially there for you to hand and behind you. And I think people do, I often show a little model of a boat floating over some rocks and say, you know, resilience is like the water level under the boat. You know, if you've got a lot of water under the boat and above between you and the rocks, you're going to float over it. If your water level is really low, you're going to crash into those rocks. And, you know, as doctors, we've become very fascinated with the rocks and very fixated on removing the rock of cancer or the rock of diabetes,
right.
But we often don't pay attention to the resilience. And sometimes, in fact, our treatments actually have the knock-on effect of lowering people's resilience, very much the case with cancer treatments.
That's it.
So how can we help people to pay attention to their own resilience, find out the things for them that build their resilience, and importantly, identify any drainers to their resilience and try and minimise those, particularly at crucial points, like while you're going through treatment or while you're getting back on your feet after treatment.
Yeah, well,
so it's a great word.
It's really good. I mean, this feature of cancer treatment being that, you know, one of the things that everybody accepts that cancer is, it's an effect of a lowered immune system. Your immune system has failed to protect you from these mutations, and cancer's been enabled to spread. Well, you know, when the treatments include lowering the immune system drastically, there's something not adding up here. It's not right. So however they may be helpful, these treatments under the right circumstances, it's clear that everything should be done to counter this immune lowering effect to them, because I mean that's the last thing people effectively need if they're trying to actually escape from cancer properly and get their resilience back again. So I think it's a good word, because it's I think it's given the whole of integrative medicine a bit of a leg up, frankly, the concept of resilience coming mainstream in the way that it has around COVID, where it's become increasingly apparent that people who haven't got much resilience are really hit by COVID, and the people who are actually fundamentally really well, it's like, well, it's no big deal. And this background, like you called it, the water level that people have, obviously is an enormously important thing, and, you know, no more so than when you're facing something like cancer. So I hope that I think it's sort of ushering in the concept, if you like, of lifestyle medicine as being like, well, this is obviously something we need to deal with this particular aspect, because drugs were never going to do that, are they? They're never going to give you that water level. No drug will ever do that. So it has to be something that is supportive of life in the normal nutrients and the air and all the actual ingredients of wholesome, good life that we know that keep and make people healthy.
There's another word going around on the, you know, on the peripheries now, and it'll be interesting to see whether that kind of catches on. Salutogenesis, which is this idea.
I've never heard that one.
You know, health. You haven't heard that one. That's you should watch out. That's coming too. But okay. It's that idea that we are that actually we need to be thinking about creating health, not just treating illness. Right. And it's an old concept, but given a new word that actually just says a lot of 21st century. You know, environmental lifestyles and things are against that. So we actually need to have active processes to build health and build resilience. So right. It's an interesting word, and I wonder whether it will catch on in the same way that resilience has caught on, because it gives you a different slant. And you know, is this salutogenic? Is this and actually, you know. Things like a bone marrow transplant, you know, where you're completely wiping out somebody's immune system temporarily to really blast the cancer, and then you know, reinfusing it and getting their immune system back up and running. You know, these are all techniques that have their merits. But as you say, in the background, what we should be doing at every moment possible is making sure that we are keeping the immune system and all the other body's natural defense mechanisms and repair mechanisms working in as good as condition as possible. And many integrative approaches, you know, that is their primary focus, so it makes absolute sense to combine them.
Absolutely. Anyway, that's a good concept. Hopefully again that's kind of was a major support again for everything that all the efforts that integrative medicine, all the techniques have been brought to the table. That's what they are essentially. I mean, by far, the majority of integrative medicine is about that subject. Salutogenesis, that's what you called it. Have I got it right?
Salutogenesis, yes. And I think now, really, our challenge in integrative medicine is how to make it simple and practical. And I thought one of Santosh Rao's really key points was like, we can't all be experts in all of these different disciplines. And there'll be a very few people who have a handle on a lot of this, but many people who can just have enough of the basics to really make sure that it is addressed, recognized, and that people are signposted to the right person who can help them with it. So I think as the concept as the sort of the principles of we need to support the body, we need to use a variety of approaches come into the mainstream, I think one of the jobs for the BSIO is to help patients navigate, but also help professionals navigate. Keep it simple. You know, the underlying principles are pretty simple. And as you say, a lot of it is kind of quite basic lifestyle approaches that really make the difference. And I think if we can stick to those, you know, messages and keep, you know, agree as much as possible with each other, which again is one of the wonderful things. You know, we had nutritional therapists and dietitians there yesterday, which was just a wonderful moment where actually sometimes professional groups whose messages haven't always seemed like they actually come together and there isn't much consensus. Actually, we are beginning to see more consensus and more commitment to finding that consensus there.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. I think that was one of the things that came out in our event last year, which we did with you, you know, the Your Life and Cancer. I just felt there was so much consensus came out of that from all sorts of different quarters, you know, which is just was quite noticeable how much people were agreeing with each other about things, you know, and that hasn't been the history in the past. You're absolutely right. People have been terribly much defending their corner and being right, you know, whatever it was. So I think there's much more of a willingness to find out what's best. So that's a great change. All right. Well, look, we're going to end it there. Congratulations on such an explosive relaunch of the BSIO. I think it's right on track now to become to be the key professional organisation that's driving integrative oncology forward in the UK. So the event's clearly been everything that the BSIO hoped for. Presumably you've got some thoughts about next year already in the pipeline. Be back with more.
We're really hoping so. And I think there were a few topics that obviously we didn't include. And I think most notably, there's the kind of survivorship. We know that many, many people turn to these integrative approaches when they finish treatment. And we didn't really have a kind of rehabilitation survivorship session where an awful lot of the evidence around approaches. The other that I feel very passionate about is that we didn't have a session on kind of professional and practitioner health and resilience, because I think if you do start to practice integrative approaches, one of the things is that you are confronted with how is your own resilience doing. And I think we know that there's a lot of stress in the system, you know, massive amounts of pressure, particularly post-COVID, but, you know, in the private sector for self-employed people, but also within the NHS. And so I think that would be a great session to spend more time on. And there's a lot of people are talking about precision medicine. I think there are all sorts of ways in which we can think about personalizing care more. So I think there's definitely opportunities. I'd love to do a two-day event. It would be great to have a bit more chance for experiential, people to actually experience some of these techniques in whatever way we can manage, virtually or face-to-face, but also to have more chance to network. And I think actually having a little bit more space so that people can meet each other and that we can have smaller themed workshop groups would be great. So I think there's lots of ideas for the future, and lots of questions that were asked that really help point the way for us at the SIO as to what some of the educational needs among our members and among the people who are interested are. So
brilliant.
I think we've got some really clear ideas of the future.
Lots for the mixing pot. And, very good.
I mean, I think, as you know, Robin, we couldn't have done it without our event organisers, fantastic team at Progressive Communications, who have really put in the hours to do the research, to do marketing, to support us, to bring together a programme that made coherent sense, and who really have a passion for this field. They've run patient-facing events in this area, but they're very skilled at running professional events. They're very skilled at running research events. So I think the hope is that actually, you know, these sorts of events aimed at slightly different sectors for people who are involved in this will start to pop up. And a big shout out really to Virsha and Sophie from Progressive Communications, who worked phenomenally hard behind the scenes to put it all together in a very short time scale and really sort of, you know, made the virtual thing happen at a time when many other conferences are just being parked. So I think it was a fantastic experience. And I think the reach and the variety of people in the audience is a lot down to their sort of skill and expertise.
Very good.
I wanted to say just a quick thank you to you, Robin, because I think, you know, although you're not a professional, you know, you had the brainchild in 2012, you know, that this is exactly what people with cancer need, is professionals to come together around the table and to sort of, you know, iron out their differences, put the different pieces of evidence on the table, weigh them up, appraise them, share clinical experiences, share clinical practice. And I think, you know, you've had the sort of persistence and the kind of tenaciousness to kind of keep going, even though it was pretty quiet for many years. So I'd really like to just make sure that you get some credit for having that vision and for sticking with it. And really, I think we all owe a debt to you. And I'm really hoping that we can do you proud, taking it forward into its next phase.
You are already. Don't worry. It's great. I love seeing it. And it's pretty obvious that it needs to happen from the patient point of view, which is where I was looking from. It wasn't any great insight on my part, but it has taken a little bit of persistence, I'll give you that. So anyway, here we are.
I think patients have been integrating their care for ages, forever. Yeah. You know, I suppose I first became aware of this in 1990. So gosh, that's a long time, when I was sort of meeting patients who were trying to find things, but getting very little support from anywhere as to how to bring it together.
Yeah.
So, you know, what always has struck me is that integrative medicine happens. It just happens at the patient level, and we just need to get on board with that now.
Yeah.
So,
Great. Thank you very much, Catherine.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure, Robin, and thank you. Lovely. Yeah. Take care then, Robin.
Bye-bye.
All right.
The BSIO has two new co-chairs, a powerhouse team comprised of senior NHS oncologist Dr. Penny Kehioglu and integrative medicine specialist Dr. Nina Fuller-Chavelle. I've invited Nina to tell us more about the BSIO and its plans. Hi, Nina. Welcome. Hot from the conference. You must be pretty pleased with what happened.
Absolutely. It's been delightful to have so many different professionals from different disciplines attend and so much enthusiasm.
That's quite a rarity in Britain. Well, at first, really. So I wanted to talk to you a bit about the BSIO because people came along who weren't necessarily aware of the BSIO. They just saw the event, wanted to lap up all the great content. But the BSIO obviously is the organisation behind it. All the thinking behind the events come from the BSIO. So you as a co-chair, I thought you'd like to talk to us a bit about what the purpose is of the BSIO. First of all, do you want to tell us what the aims are?
Absolutely. So BSIO is a multidisciplinary organisation that's not for profit. And our goal is to promote integration of conventional, psychological, nutrition, lifestyle, and complementary medicine and cancer care. We're really trying to achieve a vision where evidence-based, comprehensive, integrative healthcare is readily accessible to anyone affected by cancer in the UK. So this is a big vision, and how we're going to achieve it is really to support healthcare professionals from multiple different settings, from NHS to private care, by facilitating interdisciplinary communication and collaboration, providing educational resources and promoting good clinical practice, and supporting research that's really necessary for effective integrative care. Mm-hmm. So that's my summary of the amazing things that BSIO wants to do.
Excellent, excellent. I love it. So who's it for?
It is for any healthcare professional who is involved in caring for patients with a cancer diagnosis. So anyone from doctors, nurses, physiotherapists and other allied healthcare professionals to all of the nutrition professionals, from dietitians to nutritionists and nutritional therapists, to anyone involved in complementary health, the whole span of everybody involved, from hospitals to community care to private care, everybody who's involved in supporting patients with a cancer diagnosis.
Excellent. All inclusive. Okay, so how about some of the actual things that the BSIO is planning to do, the kind of member benefits, if you like, and the things that will be going on in the coming year?
Absolutely. So we've got a membership model where people can join us on an annual membership basis, which is £120 a year, or they can join us on a monthly membership basis, which is just £10 a month. And we've got a student membership available as well, which is £36 a year. In terms of membership benefits, we're going to be issuing a regular newsletter that keeps people up to date with research in integrative oncology. We're going to be starting a monthly webinar program from September, which aims to educate healthcare professionals in key topics and key new research in integrative oncology. Mm-hmm. And of course, we'll also be planning, alongside our amazing partners, Progressive Communications, the next year's conference, Integrative Oncology UK, right. 2022.
Yeah. Any thoughts on what that might look like yet? Or, I mean, early days, obviously, but...
It is early days, but we hope it's going to be a two-day in-person conference, which will be amazing. And we'll be able to pick up on themes we weren't able to cover in this year's event as an introductory event. So, for example, we weren't able to cover some of the targeted therapies, immunotherapy, hormone therapies, and some of those side effects, and some of the other key topics in integrative oncology and up-and-coming research. So I think there'll be a lot more scope to be able to really get meaty about the different areas over a two-day event.
Okay. So we have a related organisation across the water there in America, the SIO, the Society for Integrative Oncology. Any real connections here that members are going to have anything to do with?
Absolutely. We are at the moment looking at creating a joint membership model where people will be able to join both SIO and BSIO for one fee. It's going to be £150 a year, or again, we can split that down into monthly payments. And for that, they will have access to all of SIO's membership benefits, including natural medicines database, which is essential for things like interaction checks, as well as some of their internal membership resources. We're also going to be giving people, of course, discounts to both the SIO and BSIO events going forward. And we are looking to set up a collaboration between our different working groups. So something that BSAO is really passionate about is the three streams of clinical practice, education, and research. And as a part of clinical practice, we're going to be creating working groups who are going to be aiming to review the evidence and create guidelines and toolkits and useful resources in specific areas of cancer care and the integrative model. And so we're going to be collaborating with SIO to make sure that we are complementing our activities. So, for example, SIO is launching a working group on depression and anxiety in cancer care and how integrative care can really support that. So at that point, we would be either indirectly involved in that and then ratifying their guidelines. And then we would create a working group model. And again, they can be working with as well. And we're going to be aligning our strategies in the future so that we can actually make sure that all the different clinical pain points that clinicians experience when dealing with patients going through cancer treatment and beyond that are addressed in a really good, robust way.
Okay, so it's quite an important relationship, really, isn't it? This, because whereas the BSAO hasn't been making a lot of noise until right now, the SIO, of course, has been having quite an impact in the States for a very long time and has quite considerable resources which would be available to people if they had this joint membership.
Absolutely. And over time, we're also going to be building on their model and creating more UK-specific resources because, of course, our healthcare model is different from the US.
Right.
And we need to recognise it and adapt to it as well.
Excellent. Well, sounds exciting. So people should get over to the BSIO website, of course, which is
bsio.org.uk, and come and join us. It's an exciting time for integrative oncology in the UK.
Certainly is. Thank you very much, Nina.
Great to be here, Robin. Thank you.
Bye-bye. If you're any kind of professional supporting people with cancer, do check out the new BSIO website that Nina just mentioned. That's bsio.org.uk. And consider becoming part of the movement to drive change towards integration in the UK. Also, professionals and any others listening may be interested to hear my exciting new podcast, Cancer Talk, that I'm co-hosting with oncologist Dr. Penny Kehioglu, which is all about building bridges between conventional cancer care and complementary and lifestyle medicine. You can find Cancer Talk by going to the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and clicking the link that's on the homepage. Thanks for listening today. I look forward to bringing you another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio next week. Goodbye. We'll be right back.